MatchFit USA. Welcome to the MatchFit USA podcast. Here is your host, Jason Davis.
Welcome to MatchFit USA podcast number 9. Thank you guys for joining us. This week, got a very special guest. He's the managing editor of AmericanSoccerNews.net, Mr. Nathaniel Baker. How you doing, Nathaniel?
Quite all right. How are you, Jason?
Pretty good. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. So we got, you know, on AmericanSoccerNews.net, like I mentioned, where you're the managing editor, you have an op-ed piece recently asking the question, is the end of parity in MLS, is that being evidenced by results so far this year? Why don't you talk a little bit about what your thoughts are, and talk about your piece, but also talk about, you know, what your thoughts are on the idea of parity in MLS.
Right. Well, basically, I mean, MLS is set up to be all about parity, as you probably know. You know,
absolutely,
it's league owned. The teams, all the teams' budgets, you know, their transfers, you know, basically everything they do is controlled by the league. Last year, I think when the Red Bulls took over New York, for example, they tried to, you know, have their own plane to fly these guys to games, and the league said, forget it, because it puts you at an unfair advantage.
Right.
So, you know, that's just one small example of, you know, the lengths to which the league has gone to kind of level the playing field so that, you know, a different team can, if not win, then at least contend every year.
Which is a very American concept, what Americans are used to.
Yeah, yeah, in some way. I mean, and you could also argue that we like our dynasties.
Well, that's true. Baseball is an example of that to a certain extent. But
yeah, well, right, exactly.
But the NFL model is give everybody an equal
chance. The
NFL
model, absolutely, yeah, is like that. I guess the NBA and the NHL are working towards that a little bit.
Salary caps.
But but also, you know, that was one of the mistakes that the NASL made. And so it makes sense in many ways for the MLS to have such tight controls over team expenditures and things like that. So basically you have this situation where, and you've seen it and you saw it last year, you know, where different teams can win. You know, last year the Red Bulls, you know, of course, obviously being the team that I'm most familiar with here in New York, you know, had a very mediocre record, barely got into the playoffs on the very last day, and made MLS Cup and almost won, actually.
Right.
Although they were probably beaten pretty soundly by Columbus, but it's a different story. But so okay, so you have these now this year, what's happened? All this is that it's only 3 games in.
Right. Small.
So
sample
you have a
size.
Team. Go ahead.
No, just it's a small sample size, and people have to remember that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's kind of part of my point. But on the surface, at least, you have, you know, a team that in Seattle that's unbeaten, unscored upon, right? They've won all 3 of their games. You have Chivas USA, which is, you know, on paper at least been dominant. They've won all 3 of their games.
Right.
You know, you have the New England Revolution are unbeaten. Mm-hmm. So, and then on the other side, you have FC Dallas, which has not won any games, not gotten any points.
Right.
And, you know, again, the New York Red Bulls, who have 1 point and have not scored any goals. You know, they got 1 goal to their credit, which was a self goal by New England.
Right.
By Jay Heaps, if I remember correctly. But so, you know, so on, and again, it is a small sample size, but, you know, on paper, you have, you know, you can maybe take a look at this and say, hey, maybe parity is over. Maybe, or at least it's ending. Maybe, you know, we're entering a new era here in MLS. And, you know, there's other support for that argument. But, you know, you have the Chicago Fire, another unbeaten team. But what I think is that the very fact that you have a team like Seattle that comes into the league and, you know, wins its first 3 games so easily and heads to the top of the table is proof that, you know, parity is not only still here, but more alive than ever.
Because they've been able to do that from an expansion situation.
Exactly. From an you know, I mean, granted they have a great coach and such, but you know they have the same restrictions as everybody else. And okay, they got Youngberg, right? Although he's only played like a half so far. So they signed the designated player, whereas a lot of teams, you know, haven't signed them. Although also you could also say that hasn't really hurt a lot of teams. You know, Houston Dynamo, of course, won twice without a designated player. But so you know, and what I think looking at it is that, you know, it's not, the parity is still here. You know, this is MLS. The play might be a little better in some areas. Some teams might be a little better, and some teams are worse. You know, again, the Red Bulls being an example of a team that's clearly worse than they were at the very end of last year for a variety of reasons, but none of which have anything to do with, I think, with the fact that, you know, there's no more parity.
Right. Well, you're talking about something that it's so inherent that it's never, as long as there's the salary cap and the budget restrictions and those type of issues affecting every single team, you're not going to get away from parity. So at this point, what it is not only is it the small sample size, and you're talking about three games right. in, and some teams seem more dominant than others, and some teams seem more inept than others. The question is then, why is that for those teams? And you mentioned the coach. You mentioned Siggy Schmid for Seattle.
Sure.
Maybe it comes down to coaching for some of these teams.
That, you know, that's one thing. I mean, you look at Siggy Schmid, right? You look at Steve Nichol, right, in New England. You know, you look at Tom Soane in D.C., and you look at Preki at Chivas.
You take the other end of the spectrum, and then I you know, I have some FC Dallas fans that listen to this. Seattle Hyman's on the other end of that spectrum.
Right. But I don't know if that's entirely fair, because you also have Juan Carlos Osorio, who, you know, last year in the playoffs was able to take this team that was, again, completely mediocre and basically, you know, throw out half the starting lineup and create something that, you know, went all the way to MLS Cup. So I don't know if it's entirely the coaching. A lot of it is, you know, with the Red Bulls, it might be, you know, not so much that the coaching is bad, but just that, you know, he's taken this early time in the season to, you know, to try to experiment with a bunch of different things.
Well, yeah, we're talking about a very long season. And you're also
talking about a very long season.
You're also talking about a league where, just as the Red Bulls proved last year, the number of points, I mean, you want to get as many points as possible, obviously. But as long as you make the playoffs, that's the important thing.
Yeah, so you make the playoffs, right, exactly. I mean, you'll get into a different division like the Red Bulls did and make it even easier on you.
They
know?
Get out west and, yeah. I mean, you know, that's the issue with New York is if he is kind of playing with his team still, which, you know, most teams try to do in the preseason, if he's still kind of playing with his team to find out what he's got, it looks bad because these games matter and they haven't played well. But at the same time, because it is a long season and because there is the playoffs at the end of the road, it's not as important as, say, if you were in a relegation battle in England or something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no relegation. You know, and another thing about the Red Bulls is that, you know, they have a bunch of players that they've signed that aren't able to play because of visa issues, because of injuries. And also, don't forget, their best player last year, Dave Vandenberg, is now, surprisingly, of course, in Dallas. So, you know, those are all things that factor into it as well.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, the reasons for parity in MLS, they all make sense, and they're all legitimate reasons. There are reasons for the salary cap. There are reasons for restrictions on how players move. All of those things to avoid what, like you said, to avoid what happened with an ASL.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good thing?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, I think you could argue at this point that it's too much of a good thing, you know, that where, you know, first of all, you have the overall level of play kind of at a level where it can't go any further, mm-hmm. right? Where it's kind of like it's all the lowest common denominator type of thing.
Exactly.
And so you have that, and then you also have teams that are prevented from signing the players that they can afford to and that they want to, that would make their teams better, that would get more fans into the stadiums, that would get more media to follow the games. Mm-hmm. So you can certainly argue at this point that, you know, okay, this whole MLS model, that this whole league-owned model that MLS instituted partly as a result of NASL and to avoid those mistakes is now outmoded and is no longer necessary. I don't know if you're at the point where if that's an argument that's I'm personally willing to make, but you could certainly make it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, because, again, I mentioned the Red Bulls. I mean, you know, let's face it, you have these teams, a lot of them are playing in front of very sparse crowds. A lot of them have to travel. You saw this with New England last year, you know, ridiculous amounts on charter flights. And not only that, you know, a lot of the, I think New England had to change planes a bunch of times last year when in some Superliga games, and they were, you know, with and other games they had, and it's just a logistical nightmare.
Right. Well, you're kind of talking about two different issues to a certain extent.
Sure.
I mean, we're talking about parity and keeping salaries at a reasonable level and making sure that the league is viable from a financial standpoint. And then we're talking about things like charter flights for New England because they have to travel so much, or small things that the league could do to help their team survive what is a grind, what is a long season. I mean, it's brought up a lot. It's a very big country, and the teams are very spread out. And you're talking about fixture congestion has become an issue in the past couple of years with the Champions League and with Superliga and U.S. Open Cup and all of these things. And the league does not put these teams in the position to compete properly in those environments because of all these little rules that are supposed to keep costs down and keep the league
exactly.
viable.
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of exactly my point. You made it much more articulate than I did. Yeah, and exactly. So you have all that's an example of, I think, where the league is really holding itself back by this whole, you know, institution of parity. And again, you know, none of us want to see the NASL, that type of thing, happen again.
There's got to be a happy medium, though, right, Nathaniel?
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking, and that's kind of what I think the argument could be at some point, is that, look, you want to, you know, give these teams a little more structure to sign players, you know, to build up to market their team, right? To, you know, to institute certain, you know, luxuries or whatever, mm-hmm. be it easier travel or I don't know, you know, is MLS at the point now where, you know, this institution of parity is hurting it? Maybe not. I don't know.
It's a good question. And part of the problem that comes up for me is, obviously, there's the NASL shadow over the league, but there's also, you know, does the MLS want to become, let's say, Scotland, for example?
Right.
You have two dominant teams in Scotland, and then a bunch of also rans, and yes, some of those teams are very well supported, but some of them aren't. I mean, some of them are on an MLS level when it comes to attendance and attention, and then you end up with this giant disparity. You lose half of the country mm-hmm. that might be interested in the game otherwise.
Right.
But like, you know, like we just said, there's got to be some way, a happy medium. And the problem is that maybe we're not smart enough to figure it out. If we can't figure it out, maybe MLS can't figure it out.
Yeah, who knows? Right. I mean, that's a very good point. I mean, you don't want to have people, you know, stuck supporting losing teams, right?
Exactly.
But of course, I was going to say, you don't want a situation that you have like in Dallas where their home opener has 6,000 fans. But that's exactly what you have.
because parity is here, and because it's here to stay for the foreseeable future, that I think that's partly what frustrates FC Dallas fans so much, is that they are on an even playing field with everybody else, and yet they still can't figure out, you know, how to get a couple of points out of three games.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that could be. That could be.
So,
So I don't know. I mean, there's also legal issues. You know, I spoke to a lawyer once who was, I think, had a part in creating the first collective bargaining agreement. And mm-hmm. I think legally, where you have it's kind of contradictory for you to have a league-owned structure where you have different teams competing against each other. I mean, if you think about it, where, you know, if the league owns every team and yet these teams have to compete against each other, I mean, isn't that kind of
conflict
counter,
of interest,
you know?
Yeah.
So that may be something that but I think the players, like, I mean, if they were going to strike, I think the collective bargaining agreement is up for renewal.
Yeah, it's coming up, and I've talked about it on the podcast in the past, and it'll be an issue going forward.
I don't know how much leverage the players have.
That's the good question, especially with the economy. Let's go ahead, and I'm going to take our first break, Nathaniel, if you don't mind. We've got a lot to say here. A MatchFit USA podcast number 9. Thank you guys for listening. Be right back. More with Nathaniel Baker of American Soccer News. Back with MatchFit USA podcast number 9. Still talking to Nathaniel Baker of American Soccer News. Guys, you guys should go and check that site out. Lots of good American soccer discussion. Nathaniel had that op-ed piece on parity. We just talked about that. Nathaniel's in New York, so we're going to go ahead and move on. Nathaniel, I know you're like I said, you're in New York, you're Red Bulls, you follow the Red Bulls, but this new USL team that's starting up in New York City, I don't think a lot of people really kind of grasp exactly what's going on there, whether that's a New York team, a city team or not. What are your thoughts on the new USL team out there?
Well, first of all, I mean, I think any competitive professional soccer in the area is a good thing. So, you know, if it's a New York City team, if it's a Long Island team, if it's a Queens team, whatever, I think it's great.
Doesn't matter to you.
Yeah, and I'll try to support it, as much as I can. Now, the whole reason for this, and it's kind of kicked off this holy war between the, Red Bull supporters and, this whole grassroots organization, mainly called the Borough Boys, that have been trying to get a second MLS franchise
in New York City. They're connected to this USL team.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, they are. So, you had this last expansion round, and New York, mainly because of Fred Wilpon, the Mets owner, New York Mets baseball owner, who was supposed to be bankrolling this and building a new stadium, because of his investments in Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme, was no longer an option. So then the next thing is that you had this USL team, and it was announced, I think, a couple weeks ago that, the FC New York, or I think is what they're going to be called, and that they're going to come to play somewhere in the area in 2010, starting 2010, USL 1, right?
Right.
Now, all they've announced so far is the name of the team. I think they have the team's badge or something, a website, and they said they're going to be playing the games, most home games, at Hofstra University, which is in Long Island.
Right, right.
Now, if you're all familiar with the area, from Manhattan at least, Giant Stadium in the Meadowlands is closer than the Hofstra is in Long Island.
Is it closer by distance, or is it just easier to get to?
It's both.
Okay.
There are buses that go to Giant Stadium. Whereas Hofstra, I don't think there's anything. I've never done that trip. I've never done the trip, period, least of all by public transport. But it's definitely, it's not New York City. It's Nassau County, Long Island. Mm-hmm. So, the fact that this team is trying to brand itself as New York City and is not even playing any games in New York City, they say they want to, but the question is, can they? And New York City government is such a mess. getting permits to play these games. I don't even know if there's any fields that would be USL sanctioned. Apparently, the reason they chose Hofstra is because it's the only one.
Okay.
They also have college fields at Columbia University.
Yeah, I did hear Columbia mentioned. I was going to ask
about
that.
But they don't have anything concrete. Okay. They also have I think St. John's University in Queens has a field. I think Fordham University in the Bronx has one. There's also been talk about Icon Stadium, where the Cosmos played for a while in the 70s, and also where the not the current women's professional team, but the past one, played in the early part of the decade, which would be a great place. But I don't know if they're allowed to play there. I don't know what the scene is. So basically, right now, you have a lot of questions around this team, and very few answers, and nobody seems to know exactly who the guy Doug Peterson, I believe, is his name, the guy that owns the team. He's apparently looking for partners in Europe. I think according to some reports that I've read on it, but obviously the question is, and Red Bulls fans will say, let me go back. One of the contentious issues between, about the Red Bulls is, and that the people in New York City say is that they shouldn't be calling themselves New York because they play in New Jersey.
just to kind of go off topic for a second, I mean, that same argument applies to the Giants and the Jets, right?
That's exactly right. But then the counter argument to that is, the Giants and the Jets started in New York. They were in New York institutions. And they just happened to move to New Jersey, because that was the logistical reason for it.
Right, because there wasn't going to be a stadium in New York.
Exactly. So, that's the counter-argument to that. And then, the counter-argument to that is, it's still Metro New York. There's no other teams in the area, at least of all in MLS. And back and forth we go.
Right.
you know, I certainly think there's probably more support for the Red Bulls arguments than for the.
Okay, it's New York. It's huge. Tons of people. All that stuff. Lots of different demographics. Lots of different immigrant groups. All those different things. If we're talking about U.S., this is a USL team. Right. Obviously, they're going to be working on a smaller level than MLS. Although some would argue the quality is the same and blah blah blah. We won't get into that. But let's say that eventually, just like in Portland and Vancouver, this is kind of a setup to try to get to MLS.
Yeah.
Will New York support two teams?
Well, I think it would. I mean, I certainly think it's big enough, but I mean, I think that's. We're talking about a point far off in the future.
Well, right,
because
of course.
What you're going to have to do is you're going to have to build a stadium, and building things, period, in New York is a bureaucratic nightmare, and building something like a stadium is even more so.
Right.
And you know, with Fred Wilpon, they thought they could accomplish it because not only did he have deep pockets, but he also had political connections and such.
Now, just let me
Let
me clarify just quickly. Wilpon and the idea of another New York MLS team. Now, that was going to be kind of in tandem with City Stadium or whatever, or City Field.
There was some talk about that that's what they were going to build it in the City Field parking lot where the old Chase Stadium was.
Okay.
Or Willits Point, I think, in a different part of Queens.
Right.
So there's some talk about that. But basically, you're going to need, if you're going to get an MLS team in New York City or Long Island, you're going to have a stadium. Or at least, and probably not even, plans and promises of stadium, but actual groundbreaking. And that is going to be something, especially in this economy, that is going to be very, very difficult, if not impossible, to pull off.
Right. I mean, and we've obviously seen that some of these teams that thought they had stadiums lined up or deals in place to get moving on stadiums, they've all come crashing back to earth. And I think part of that's the economy, but everybody is kind of on pins and needles, and even Portland at this point, after being awarded a franchise, is having issues, and they've got NIMBY people out there. So there's a whole mess, and I would think that not only do you have the bureaucratic issues in New York, I think what a lot of MLS fans assume, and it depends on how much you've read up on it and how much you've looked into it, and I know Wilpon's involvement. Like I said, I had heard whisperings of something right next to Citi Field.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of MLS fans kind of picture in their mind, and most of them have never been to New York. In fact, I've never been to New York, but I think they picture in their mind, some kind of urban setting stadium smack dab in the middle of Manhattan, which isn't going to happen, right?
No, no way.
Absolutely.
The closest
not.
Thing they could have to that is Icon Field. Icon Field, named after Carl Icahn. It's on an island called Randall's Island.
Okay.
Which is to the east of Manhattan. It's actually right near where I live, on the Upper East Side. But it's kind of between Manhattan, Brooklyn, and Queens in the East River.
But we're talking about easy access.
What's that?
Easy access.
No. Yeah. I mean, you could create. I don't know. There's highways and stuff that do go there. So
okay.
You could create water taxis. It could be done.
Well, that's the biggest issue, obviously, with any team that's trying to build a stadium. We mentioned FC Dallas before in our discussion, and part of the issue I hear out there, and I've never, I haven't been out there and seen Pizza Hut Park, but part of what I hear about the problem with Pizza Hut Park is that it's so far out.
Yeah,
it's so far removed from the city proper and from what that team's fan base should be, that they're defeating the purpose of having that stadium. And I think, just to relate it back to where I am and the local issues here with DC United, they're trying to get, this county that's right next door to DC, on the east side of DC, to build them a stadium, and that's been squashed now. And there's discussions, this locality might be interested or this locality might be interested. And all the ones that I hear are either too far out and too far removed and defeat the purpose and probably wouldn't serve DC United in the long run, or they're impossible to get to for other reasons.
And that's exactly what you have here with the, if they were to put the team in Long Island at Hofstra. I mean, that would completely defeat the purpose of calling it New York City if it's just in Long Island.
We're talking about the Long Island, FC Long Island, basically, at that point.
Well, or you could call it FC New York. At least it's New York State.
Yes, but I think the point for them was we name it FC New York because people are going to connect it to the city. But it's not a city team.
Right. It doesn't look very likely. Now, having said that, you know, Long Island is a soccer hotbed, you know. There's tons and tons of soccer players. You know, if they put it there, if they put it close to the Queens border, you know, Western Long Island, where it's still accessible, and it would still be more convenient for the, you know, people living in the eastern half of New York City proper to get to than, you know, those living, you know, than Red Bull Arena would be.
Okay.
Right? So you could do that, and that would still attract it. It'd be like the Mets and Yankees, right? The Mets, Shea Stadium is built in Queens, so people from Queens and the Bronx traditionally support them. And, you know, the Yankee Stadium's in the Bronx, so people from, you know, northern Manhattan and Bronx and points north, you know, go there. So it could be kind of a similar thing. And you definitely would have, I think, enough support for both teams. And that reminds me that there has been some talk about building it at Aqueduct, I think, which is a horse racing track, or a defunct horse racing track, right in eastern Queens on the border of Nassau County. And there's been some talk of building it there, which again is not, it is Queens, it is, which makes it New York City, but and it's somewhat accessible, but it's not, I mean, for people like me living in Manhattan, it's no easier to get to. It would be, Red Bull Arena is still going to be easier, let me put it that way.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, it looks more and more like it's going to be a Long Island team if it happens.
Do you think, you know, you mentioned the owner's name, and I don't know him, and I haven't checked on him. I don't know what kind of portfolio he's carrying, which is obviously something
either.
That MLS is very interested in. We've seen that St. Louis couldn't get a team because their portfolio wasn't thick enough. I wonder if he is trying to set himself up. Now, you know, obviously there's the expansion fee, which you have to pay up front, and MLS teams are not right now a guaranteed moneymaker. But, you know, you wonder sometimes, and I don't know, like I said, I don't know this guy, I don't know his background. Is he trying to set himself up to pull the Portland and Vancouver trick, or is this kind of just a nod to, well, the city doesn't have a team, we kind of want to have, you know, kind of want to take advantage of whatever, you know, whatever desire there is for a team on that side of the city, because it's not in the city, but it's on the other side of the city from the Red Bulls.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. You have to wonder about the motives, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I would suspect that he's going to try, his long-term plan is to turn this into an MLS franchise. But I don't know anything about him either. I don't know where he's made his money. I don't know, you know, how much money he has. I don't know who's backing him, where his other holdings are. In fact, I barely even know his name.
Well, we'll have to see how that plays out. I mean, obviously,
yeah, exactly.
2010, FC New York. Have to wonder, you know, wonder about their draw, wonder if Hofstra's the right place for them to be. We're going to go ahead and take another break. Nathaniel Baker with me, Jason Davis, MatchFit USA Podcast number 9. Be right back after this. Back with MatchFit USA Podcast number 9, talking to Nathaniel Baker, managing editor of AmericanSoccerNews.net. Nathaniel, one of the biggest things in the American soccer scene recently has been the debut of women's professional soccer, the new women's league in the United States. They've signed some of the biggest players in the world, the Martas of the world, for example, and they've made a splash, you know, to a certain extent on FSC as broadcasting their games. I don't know a whole lot about WPS. I don't know how much you know. Do you think that this will have a negative effect on MLS?
I don't think it'll have a negative effect on MLS. I think it'll have a positive effect on MLS.
Okay. More people aware.
You know, I mean, let's face it. There's I don't know how many millions or hundreds of thousands of you know, young women and girls who play soccer in the U.S. and who, you know, support the U.S. national team. I mean, 10 years ago, you know, that World Cup final against China drew, 90,000 fans to the Rose Bowl. So, you know, the interest is definitely there, and I think it could only be a good thing for MLS.
More people, you know, aware of the game in general is good for the league.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, let's face it. I mean, from what I've seen of WPS, the level of play and these these women, their technical abilities with soccer are, from a purely technical standpoint, much better than what you see in MLS. The only difference, obviously, and the reason why they're not as good as the men is because, you know, they lack the strength and the power and the speed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you look at their technique and their ball handling, and, you know, there's very few mistakes in WPS.
Well,
we're
talking about, I mean, startup league, but basically we're talking about the best women's league in the world.
Absolutely. It's a startup league, but it's an all-star league.
Of course.
I mean, it has, as far as, like, it has some competition. You know, I think Marta played in Sweden last year, and there's some other countries in the world that
I know England has a Premier League women's division.
Yeah, and in Germany and such. But most of the best players are here. And there's, what, six teams, seven teams?
Right.
Seven. So, you know, I think that it's even more than a World Cup, you know, or an Olympic Games where you have like 12 or 14 different countries. I mean, this is seven different teams and some of the absolute best players in the world, not only from the US, but from everywhere. So it's really, you know, I mean, as far as the women's game, I don't think you'll see anything like it. And I have to admit, I have not watched as much of the women's game, as I would like to. And as I probably should have.
Well,
but
I know that American Soccer News, you're covering everything.
We cover everything.
My site, MatchFit USA, obviously, well, not obviously, I'll say this. I'm focused on the men's game. That's my preference. I don't want to put any words in your mouth, so don't feel like you have to.
I'll admit personally, I have more knowledge of the men's game than the women's.
Well,
game.
Of course, I think that's kind of a given. I mean, hopefully none of this comes off as sexist because I don't intend it to.
Neither do I. And we've gone to great lengths, and we continue to cover the women's game. And I know that from my perspective, I mean, I love covering the women because, I mean, they're great. You
less
know,
jaded,
they're
more accessible, all that stuff.
Now I was going to say something sexist, but I'll leave that.
I have my own worries about the women's game, and I don't begrudge them the right to play the game. I don't begrudge them the right to make a living, and if there's a market here in the United States for the women's game, that's fine. That's fantastic. But I will say that as a fan of the men's game, and specifically as a fan of MLS and of the United States men's national team, I actually. This is, like I said, this is going to come off as sexist, and I really don't mean it to. But it bothers me that I have to say United States men's national team. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, really?
Well, because for some reason, and it is kind of the evolution of the game in the United States, and the way that the leagues have kind of crumbled and come back, and we're now in, you know, we're got a decent league that's putting on a good competition and trying to get better. But the women's game still steals some of that spotlight, and like I said, it probably does come off as completely sexist. And
no, or whatever. But I mean, I have to disagree. I mean, I don't mind saying U.S. men's national team.
Is there another country in the world where you have to say Sweden, I believe Norway has a very good women's team. China, that's a different story. They don't have a good men's team, but Norway has a very good women's team. They compete with the United States, you know, for the top prizes all the time. Brazil now has a very good women's team.
Yeah.
Do you think when somebody in Brazil says to their friend, the Brazil national team, that they have to specify men or women?
No, but also, you know, a couple different things. I mean, first of all, you know, men's soccer in Brazil has a much longer tradition than women's soccer. And also, you know,
That's the issue. I mean, that is very true. And I grant that in the United States, the men's game doesn't have the history to give it the right to be the United States national team, or the or the U.S. national team.
Right. And what is the U.S. What have we ever won? The U.S.
Well, no, that's very true.
Okay, a couple of gold cups here and there. You know, right? We made the semifinals in 1950.
Well, that's right? true.
And the women have won, you know, countless things.
Right. And that speaks to the equal opportunity that we allow in this country, and the fact that we were way ahead. The United States was way ahead in getting women into soccer, and you know, now that other countries are starting to catch up now, but for the first, you know, 10 years of it being a major international competition, it was United States dominating.
Yeah.
But I think that has skewed the perception of a lot of soccer fans or non-soccer fans in the United States, specifically the non-soccer fans, the people that might check out a game on a weekend. And we you know, I mention this because it's always a struggle for MLS to get good TV ratings, to draw people in, to buy tickets. I think it skewed a lot of people's perception of soccer, and there's already enough for soccer to have to deal with from a perception standpoint, for it to also have to deal with the fact, oh, it's a women's game. The American women are the best in the world. Oh, that's a women's game. Do you understand? I mean, I know that's kind of...
Yeah, but you know what? You have that in tennis. You have that in skiing. You have that in track and field, you know, basketball. I mean, so I don't think it's an issue. Honestly, I think it'll just help MLS because people will say, you know, there's more interest in soccer and, you know, look at all these women. Hey, let's check out the men.
Well, I know that there's, I think I've heard, I don't have it in front of me here, but I'm pretty sure that they're talking about double headers and that type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, so I really do think it can only help it can only help the men's game. And I don't think MLS will be losing any fans. I mean, it's not like you have, you know, countless women that have been going to MLS games the past 10 years that are now all of a sudden going to stop going and go to WPS. I mean, the women that go to MLS games, I think, are going to continue to go, you know, because they're fans of the teams. You know, some will, in addition, go to WPS, as will many men. And, you know, I see it as a positive, really. And if you look at the way that the women play, I mean, MLS, let's face it, it's just in many levels. I mean, you have several good players, but it's really the technical displays are not very good. You mostly have, you know, these players that are, and this is also very much an American thing, that are, you know, getting by on their athletic abilities.
They're effort players.
Yeah, exactly, and which is very much an American thing. You see that in other sports too. So I think that, you know, having the women and having the way they play the game and having more exposure of that is only going to help soccer in the U.S. in every sense. Yeah, having said that, you know, I mean, I'm going to try to you know, do what I can to watch women's games and support the new league. But I was a men's soccer fan first, and so that's probably just what I'll gravitate towards.
Right. I think that a lot of people that are in the same boat as we are, that are men's fans first, will check it out. I do think it's worthwhile to watch, because you are talking about the best women's players in the world in the same league, and that's
right.
That's really nothing. That's something that no other soccer league in the world on the men's side can
right.
argue.
Absolutely not.
You know, talking about a spread of talent from, you know, various leagues in Europe and South America and everything else, so you're not getting a concentration like the WPS has. And I think that maybe some of that quality can rub off on MLS. Maybe we can hope for that.
Right.
You know, but there's definitely a value to it. I don't want to disparage it to the point that I don't think it's worthwhile. It's certainly a worthwhile endeavor. If there's, like I said, if there's a market for it here, if people want to see it, that's the nature of the United, you know, our American ideals. There's put a product out there, and I know that they've had failed leagues before, and maybe they've learned from those. So I do hope it succeeds. I just hope that, you know, you don't believe that it will erode any of the support the men's game has got here. I don't know that it will, but it worries me that it might.
Yeah, let's face it. The men's league, the MLS, has enough problems of
Very
its own
true.
Making.
Very true.
And I think that, you know, if it, I don't think that's at least of their worries right now. You know.
Okay. I think we talked about WPS. Why don't we go ahead and roll into something here? U.S. men's national team is coming off a big win over Trinidad and Tobago after a disappointing tie in El Salvador. And we've covered this a little bit on the podcast before, but I want to get Nathaniel's thoughts. How do you think the team's looking to this point, and do you have any worries going forward in the hexagonal?
I think they look okay, and I have no worries.
Well, because it's CONCACAF.
Yeah, but, you know, CONCACAF isn't that bad, actually. But I still think that the U.S. is the dominant team in CONCACAF. You know, we also, in our favor, is that Mexico is having such a horrible time. So I think that there's some issues with the team, especially defensively. Carlos Bocanegra, I'm not sure that he's the right guy to anchor the defense. Left back is a huge question.
What are the other options back there, though? That's the question everybody has.
Yeah, right. I mean, maybe you put in Chad Marshall, right? Columbus Crew. A lot of people say
he hasn't gotten a sniff, though. I mean,
no, nothing. And Bradley seems to, you know, he seems to prefer you know, his guys, which I guess is understandable on some level. And then you also have Frankie Hajduk, and who's looked awesome. You know, he was one of the best players the last couple times out for the U.S. Mm-hmm. And but he, you know, I mean, he's not getting any younger. He's obviously still in great shape, but is he going to be able to, you know, be a force at right back next year?
Well, you wonder about Frankie, and he's one of those guys we talked about in the last discussion. He's got some skill, but he's an effort guy. Motor never stops. He's always moving. He's always making those overlapping runs to get himself into dangerous positions. He's working mm-hmm. hard on the back in the back. Obviously, he's the flat out simple way to say it is he's old.
Right.
I mean,
but he doesn't play like he's old.
No,
I mean,
that's true. And as long as he's in shape,
he's younger.
As long as he's in shape, I guess that's not an issue. But you maybe wonder.
Not. I mean, here's the thing with the U.S. national team. I mean, I don't think the question is whether we're going to qualify for South Africa. I think we definitely will. You know, we may be upset somewhere along the way. We probably won't win at the Azteca. We may drop points at Costa Rica or wherever, but we're going to qualify. Now, the question is, are we going to be able to advance past the first round and even past the second round? A lot of that's going to come down to the draw, but a lot of it is also going to come down to, you know, how this team gels and if Bob Bradley can find some guys to, you know, especially defensively.
Well,
and also,
you know, a second striker. Let me ask you about Bob Bradley, just very quickly. Are you – just put your fan hat on, not you know, don't think about – necessarily the formations and who he picked. Well, I guess who he picks is part of the issue. With your fan hat, in your heart, do you believe he's the right guy to go into South Africa with?
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah, I do.
Because you think he's that good of a coach or because you think he's earned the right?
Both. Okay. I think he's a good coach. You know, I saw him here with the, you know, when they weren't even the Red Bulls yet, the Metro Stars. He was here for a couple of years. I think he's done. I was a little bit surprised to see him selected when he was a couple of years ago after Rihanna left.
Well, the story is that he was the third choice, right?
Yeah. But you know, I think he's done an admirable job since then, and I think he deserves to. I think he's a very smart guy. He's, you know, he knows the game very well, and I think he in addition to that, he deserves to be the guy that coaches a team in South Africa. What happens beyond that, then, I think is a different question.
Well,
I think if we lose in the first round, then that'll, you know, that'll be a different story for a different time.
Right. The results in South Africa will dictate whether or not he goes forward after that.
Right.
For the most part. I mean, I think we've gotten beyond the point where we keep a coach around simply for stability.
I mean, I think if we don't make it past the first round in South Africa, that there's going to have to be some questions.
I mean, Arena lost his job because of 06.
Right.
Bradley would lose his job in 2010 if the same thing happened.
Depending on how it plays out.
Well, I mean, but at the same time, the game, it's about results. So if we go out and, you know, in 06, you play horribly, but you have one good game where you play Italy to a stalemate.
Yeah.
You know, that didn't buy Arena his job.
Right, but it was also Arena's selection of players.
Well, that's
Claudio Reyna.
That's kind of what I want to get back to with Bradley.
Yeah.
Is are you happy with the selections? I mean, I know right now we're talking about a different time. We're not talking about the World Cup squad. That may be a slightly different team. And obviously you've got players emerging and everything else. And players will fall off. And he'll use guys that are in form and he'll use guys that are in shape and healthy, for one thing. But do you, this is just a thought, it's completely off the top of my head, do you believe that an American coach is too close to some of these players to really properly evaluate them for a team like the World Cup?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I mean, seriously, that just popped into my head, and I'm thinking, you know, you talked about Bradley, and he likes his guys. He likes Hajduk. There's other guys. I mean, we're not talking about his son, but we're talking about, you know, some of the more veteran guys that he feels comfortable with.
Right.
There's a concern for me, and I think every coach is guilty of this. So it's not necessarily his fault, but he's coached here for so long. He's an American. He's been here, surrounded by these players. You wonder if he can't see them for what they truly are, and if a foreign coach, and I think there's a lot of American fans that kind of want a foreign coach just on principle, that a foreign coach would be able to better evaluate these players for what they truly are.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's one of the arguments. I mean, I personally, I like having an American coach. I do think we need to we don't need the foreign coaches. I think that we, you know, there was a time where we did, and I think we've now reached the point where, you know, we can have a U.S. guy in charge of the team and kind of, you know, have his own style and such.
I'd like to think that too, and I very much hope that that's the case. You know, and I'm not calling for a foreign coach necessarily, although I think the Klinsmann rumors are going to kind of start to buzz if he loses his job.
Yeah, that would actually be very interesting.
That will be a very interesting situation.
Yeah,
but
I would probably want to support that. But
see, you made an exception.
Like, yeah, I know. I mean, but you know, but Klinsmann, he's so American.
He's
too,
very true. Very true. But he's not. He's not. But the bottom line, he's not.
No,
he's a German. He played for Germany. He's a German coach now. He's not. All right, let's go ahead. I'm going to take our last break. Come back. Nathaniel Baker, American Soccer News. Excellent stuff so far. Be right back. More MatchFit USA podcast number 9. Back with MatchFit USA podcast number 9. Jason Davis with you guys for another week. We've got Nathaniel Baker from American Soccer News with us. And Nathaniel, you guys have AmericanSoccerNews.net. You've got the Super Classico coming up. Chivas USA, LA Galaxy. Everybody talks about the intensity and the fans and the crowd and everything else. You're talking about two teams going in completely opposite directions.
That's the way things look right now, and that's our cover story, our lead story today. You know, you've got the Chivas, who are, you know, unbeaten, haven't even given up any points, you know, who are finding ways to win, who have a number of very exciting players, and you have the LA Galaxy, who have some exciting players, but who are, you know, been pretty deplorable, especially defensively. These do seem like they are, and these are teams that are headed in completely opposite directions. Again, you know, coming full circle here on where we started the show, you know, there's parity, it's a long season, blah, blah, blah. I expect the Galaxy to be improved eventually.
Do you have any concrete reasons for that? Is that just a gut feeling after Arena has had some time to kind of work himself into the job?
Yeah, I think Arena needs a little more time. I mean, he's kind of brought in several of his guys already. I think that they're gonna start playing better. It may even start this weekend. This would actually be a great time to kick it off.
There's not another team in the league that's had so much flux as the Galaxy have. I mean, everything is kind of all out of whack with them.
Yeah, with Beckham
and with Donovan coming back from Germany, and just, you know, they've had Berhalter come in recently.
Yep.
I mean, there's a lot of age on that team, and you wonder how they're going to hold up, even if Arena does get them together. Will it really last long enough to get them back to, you know, the playoff level that everybody thinks that, well, the Galaxy fans think they should be at?
Then those are questions. And then, you know, you also have a few very young players, you know, like Omar Gonzalez and you know, Sean Franklin, who, you know, are going to need a little more time, you know, to just, you know, find their footing and get used to the level of play, et cetera. I mean, they've done very well so far, especially last year Franklin did. Gonzalez is obviously a rookie, but... So, you know, that's another thing. And, yeah, you have the question surrounding Beckham. Is he going to come back? At this point, Galaxy fans are like, no, keep him there, no more. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of questions surrounding the Galaxy. I think with a guy like Arena, you know, with a guy like Donovan, they do have questions at goalie. But, yeah, I guess Ricketts is injured. He's going to be back now, I think, right?
I haven't checked recently, but I mean they
so maybe that'll help.
They sign the guy and then he immediately gets hurt. So you would hope that he would be coming back here shortly.
Yeah, and I think Berhalter has some gas left in his tank.
Right,
he'll help. So you know I think they'll find their footing. It may take a little time. Will they make the playoffs? I don't think so, but
no,
you know
probably.
You never know. And you know, in Chivas, I mean, how good is Chivas?
That's the question.
Know, I thought they were pretty good last year. I mean, and the year before too. I mean, they're exciting. I like their style a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they have some, you know, really exciting players. You know, obviously Kljestan. Of course, there's a question if he's going to be around all year. I don't think so. I didn't think he'd be here at the start of the season, to be honest. And it sounds like if MLS had agreed to pay Celtic what they were. Or
well,
vice versa. If they had agreed to sell him for what Celtic were offering, then he'd be gone.
He will have to play well in the first part of the season to lead to a move You mentioned Celtic. Well, because I mean, he's played so badly with the national team over the last.
He played horribly for the national team.
I mean that, and I think that partly because it's MLS and partly because he's an American, a lot of the teams that might be interested in him are going to put more weight on his national team performance than they will on his MLS performance. Although if he completely dazzled, which he did at times last year, which led to the whole discussion in January,
right?
That it might not matter, but.
And he scored a hat trick against Sweden in January.
Well, but so that was well, we're talking about Sweden's B team, and I think that's
C
kind of
yeah.
Well, C team. We're talking about something that might actually play against him. The fact that he played
right.
so well against a third choice Sweden team, and then played horribly, you know, against Mexico and against El Salvador, and then
right.
basically played himself out of playing, you know, playing against Trinidad and Tobago. But with Chivas, all you have to. Think about what they're going to look like when they get everybody back. I mean, they've started off gangbusters, and they're still not completely a full squad yet.
That's right.
They've got I don't know what Galindo
Razov right
Razov. I mean, and Razov is always he's always good for those moments that can push them, you know, to get a point where they were when they didn't look like they were going to get one, or to get them three when they were looked to get one, you know, and those things kind of build up, and that leads them into whether or not they can be a major playoff threat. That's way down the road now, but you know they do look good to this point.
Yeah, and their new players look good. You know, Lillingston, right?
Right.
But again, they're not going to run away with the league. You know, they're not going to run away with the title. There's just too much parity for that. There's just too many limitations on the squads.
Do you think that they're a serious threat to win the West?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so
I definitely think
this point, well, I mean, we're talking about a small sample size, and we're talking about parity. But do you see Seattle as a contender with them, or do you think Seattle will fall off?
Well, I think that it's inevitable that they're going to fall off a little bit.
Right.
I mean, let's face it, the teams they've played have not been – I mean, RSL is pretty decent. The Red Bulls were horrible.
Well, I don't know what happened to RSL. But that game was in Seattle, so you have to chalk
that game was
up
in Seattle,
to
and then
home.
Toronto is, you know, hit or miss, usually miss.
Yeah, that was kind of – that's the only one that I think they could – and Toronto hasn't, you know – it's not like Toronto came into the year as a favorite. Toronto came into
right.
the year as perhaps they'll make the playoffs for the first time.
Right.
So,
right,
but that's
exactly.
the only real, you know, check mark that Seattle gets to this point is winning in front of a hostile crowd on the road, but
right.
it's Toronto.
Right, but, you know, let's have them play Chicago. Let's have them play New England. Let's have them play.
Right, and I think that's what we need to see to see how
right.
good they are.
Exactly. So, and I think, yeah, like I said, a drop-off is inevitable. I mean, they very well may be, you know, very good at home. Like I said, Siggy Schmidt is a great coach. You know, they have talent. You know, they have tons of talent. You know, if their talent can keep itself out of trouble, that's a different issue for a different day.
Right now, Chivas has to be the clear favorite, I would think, just because of their, you know, just because of current form. I mean, that doesn't – we always
right.
have to make allowances for the season
right.
and the length and the injuries and everything else that crop up. But I think going into the year, everybody kind of had Chivas pegged as a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, RSL, especially after their playoff run last year, everybody
mm-hmm.
kind of had them pegged to challenge for the West. In fact, I think I picked them to win the West.
Right.
So, but, you know, they've kind of been up and down at this point. And
they played real well last time.
Was that
last Thursday.
Was that Columbus?
Yeah.
In the rain in Salt Lake.
Yeah.
See, I'm not sure how much weight I put on that game, partly because Columbus was missing two of their most important players, Moreno
sure.
and Hajduk. The weather was ridiculous. I mean, and that's home field advantage. That's
yeah.
part of what this league's about, part of what, you know, any sporting competition is about. You have the home field advantage. They didn't have anybody in the stands, but they did have the rain kind of, I guess, helping them out, and it seemed to just completely, you know, kill any enthusiasm Columbus had for that match. But talking about the West, you know, does RSL have it? You know, I think they've gotten some pieces there, and they look like they
oh,
might
yeah.
be able to make a push. Chivas, you know, I think winning the Super Clásico will kind of set them off as the prohibitive favorites at this point for most people who live in the moment, and we all tend to live in the moment.
Sure. Don't forget Colorado.
Well, that's a good point. I kind of always forget about Colorado, and
yeah,
they just thrashed a fairly poor Galaxy team that looked horrible
Very, yeah.
at the back. The fact that they scored in 17 seconds. I mean, I can't even.
Well, that was ridiculous.
Yeah, but you know, and you have to wonder how much of that is the Galaxy being poor, and how much of it is Colorado being much improved.
Probably a little bit of both. I mean, you know, Connor Casey looks awesome.
He can do that at sometimes, though, and he's such an imposing kind of player on the field that he kind of looks like he should always be scoring, and then sometimes, he has a tendency to disappear, so.
Yeah, he does, but he seems to be fit. Gary Smith seems to be a very good coach.
Definitely an upgrade for them, and that's a major thing.
Yes.
A major thing for Colorado is they seem to have a coach that knows what he's doing. So they may be contenders. We started off talking about the Super Classico.
Mm-hmm.
How it's called the Super Classico. It's really
the Honda Super Classico.
The Honda Super. Well, I won't go into that. It's the Honda Super Classico. It's the only real derby match in MLS. Is it all it's cracked up to be, or is it a completely manufactured thing? Is it a little bit of both?
It's definitely both. I mean, all these things are manufactured on some level.
Well, we're talking about a league with no history. Not no history, but very short history. So
of course, exactly.
You have to make these things up.
But, the Red Sox-Yankees is also manufactured on some level, I'm sure.
By the media to a certain extent, absolutely.
But, you have these two teams. I mean, yeah, they're playing for the bragging rights in the city, and they both play the same place, obviously. They seem to play each other pretty hard and rough.
Do we go with the cliche and you throw the records out the window kind of thing?
Yeah, especially because MLS and anybody.
Well, that's true. We come full circle back to parity.
Exactly. So yeah. So I think this is for the Galaxy. This is a perfect time for them to restart their season. Bruce Arena can tell them, look, okay, we've played twice. We're okay against DC United. The first game came back. And, the second game, we were horrible. Forget about it. Here, let's start our season anew. We got these guys. They think they're great. They're unbeaten. Let's kick their asses and go from there. Right?
Right. Absolutely. You are talking about a team that's only played twice. They were
exactly.
They were one of the left outsides one of these weeks with the unbalanced schedule. So, the odd number of teams in the league. So
could be the start of something new for the Galaxy. Whether it's something good is a different question.
They have to mix their old and their new. We talked about that, and it's going to be on Arena to get it done. And you have to wonder a little bit with how much of a mess that organization has been over the past. I don't know how long you want to put it on them. 2 years. Yeah. You have to wonder if there's going to be an itchy trigger finger for the powers that be out there. I mean, it's Bruce Arena, but he's gotten fired before. He's managed to get himself fired before, and I think we all have a respect for him, but you got to wonder, is he really going to be able to turn that team around? And it may be a lost cause.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that, you got parity. You have some young players. He's got Berhalter now. He'll have Ricketts coming back as starting goalie. So I think they're going to be better. I don't see Bruce Arena losing his job this year. I think the Galaxy will end up making a push for the playoffs, but then again, doesn't everybody?
Absolutely. All right, with that, we're going to go ahead and close out MatchFit USA podcast number 9. I have to thank Nathaniel for joining us. It was excellent stuff.
Thanks
American
for having
Soccer
me.
News, thank you very much. AmericanSoccerNews.net, go check out Nathaniel and all of the other writers over there. Excellent stuff on U.S. Men's National Team, MLS, WPS, we found out. Very good stuff with that as well. Thank you, Nathaniel.
Thanks.
Another week. Another great guest for the MatchFit USA podcast. I once again have to thank Nathaniel Baker for joining me. Please go check out AmericanSoccerNews.net. If you've got anything and everything you need on American soccer, I'd also like to direct you to MatchFitUSA.com. Going strong over there. Please subscribe in iTunes with the link at the top of MatchFitUSA.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. My name there is MatchFitUSA. And shoot me an email anytime, matchfitusa@gmail.com. I'm always open to suggestions on what to cover, what to write about, what to talk about. We've got some interesting stuff coming up in the not-too-distant future. We've obviously got the DC United Stadium situation. I'm hoping to find a guest to talk about that next week, but I certainly will be covering that on the blog, among other things. So thank you once again. Appreciate it. See you next week. MatchFit USA podcast number 9, Jason Davis signing off.
MatchFit USA, examining the state of American soccer.